Welcome to Where We Belong, a podcast exploring all that Cavan heritage has to offer. Today, we are doing something a little bit different. We are stepping outside the studio and I'm going to bring you around where I love to call home, a place filled with myths and legends. Bourne Boy. Let me introduce you to some of our rich, exciting heritage. So, sit back, relax, and spend some quality time with Cavan and its people. Welcome to Templeport and to Templeport Lake. We are here at St. Moog's Boathouse. We have historian Oliver Brady and a boat ready to take us all over to the island, St. Moog's Island, where we will show you and tell you a little bit of the history of St. Moog and our area. Okay, Oliver, well, I think we shall all hop into the boat and go explore and have adventures.
I'm getting old and stiff.
Okay, well, we've landed now and place is filled with beautiful wildflowers. Absolutely gorgeous.
And nettles.
So shall we go and explore, Oliver? Oh, wow.
Brr.
It's quite lovely. All right, nice gentle bit of rain here, Oliver, at the moment. Not stopping us from enjoying.
No, it's not, but...
this little adventure. And Oliver, is this now the monastery?
This is the...
or a church?
This is a medieval church, which probably existed here till about the 1500s as a church. Now when I get in and when we get a bit of shelter, I'll explain more.
The rain is getting a little heavier, but nothing like the Irish weather. We are now in the church. A ruin of sorts, built in the 6th century. One good wall, one not bad wall, and three walls covered in sycamore. The church is probably about 12 metres, 13 metres long by 10, 12 metres wide. Oliver, tell me, do you think then over the years that many people would have visited it? Was there an organised mass on Sundays or...?
Well, it was officially a from St. Moog's time until about 1500 when they moved the church to the island. There are official Vatican records which talks about the church of the island in about the late 14, early 1500s, I think 1485. So obviously that move was more convenient, obviously, to move to the island. But it would have been, now religion, I suppose, like everything else, it was, we are in the habit of going to Mass every Sunday, or some of us, maybe not at all, but at that time it was hit and miss. They would, if it was feasible to go to Mass, they'd go. If they didn't, they couldn't, you know. It was logistics. But they would come it would be, because it was associated with St. Moog, it would have been a place of pilgrimage. You see, there was an old, from the time of St. Patrick on until the arrival of the Normans in 1169, their church, although it was loyal to Rome, it kind of had its own way of doing things.
Okay.
They did their own thing and they were beginning to enter monasticism. Monasticism in island churches were quite common. There's another one up in Dunreilly, a few miles away, just across there. There's another church, not bigger than this and fancier than this, but it's there. But that this thing, yeah, taking to the islands and meditating.
The island is so immersed in history and heritage, and to think, you know, of this young child who we now celebrate, and even his feast day on the 31st of January, and to think that he was born here, all the history and the folklore that has grown up around this young boy and the family.
Where these dates come from, I don't know, but he was supposedly born about 555 on this island. The whole story of Moog is surrounded in folklore and mystery. It's to separate fact from fiction is a big thing. But anyway, as I said, he was born in 555. At the time of his birth, another holy man or saint who lived about, it'd be about 14 or 15 miles away to the west in Leitrim. There's a village called Fena in Leitrim. He had a monastery in Fena. His name was Saint Caelan. Sometimes they call it Killian or Killian, not to be confused with Killian and Mulla. He had been informed in a dream that there was a special child born on an island somewhere to the north of Fena, and that he was to go and baptise him. Now, he didn't know where this monk or this child was. He prayed for divine guidance, and he did get guidance all right in a very unusual form. St. Moog was born in June, and how we know this is from the legend. So, in the middle of June, whenever he was born, the whole South Leitrim West Cavern was covered in snow, a magical snowstorm. No global warming there. And St. Caelan's cattle broke out of their pen in Fena and headed, stampeded northwards towards this island. They didn't stop running until they got to the shore over there, and St. Caelan running after them, maybe using language that he mightn't associate with a monk, but when he got there, he discovered that St. Moog, he was on the island, this unbaptized baby. His mother, who was called Etna, was on the island as well. He called out to her, and she said that there was no boat. There were stories that the boatman had been drowned couple of days previously, and there was nobody, no boat, and there was no way of getting out to the shore, and St. Caelan had no way of getting to the island. So St. Caelan, or Caelan, asked her to look around for something flat, and there was a little house on the island, and there was a hearthstone, a flagstone for the fire, and that was the only flat thing on the island, and he said, that'll do. And he commanded the stone to float, or to slide down to the shore. And it slid down to the shore, and Moog was placed on the stone. Now, Moog, at this stage, Moog is a kind of a corruption of the saint's name. His name was A, or Aidan, Aegon. There's various, it's quite common, but Aegon A. And Moog Eo is, for those of you who know Irish, my young A. So if you say it quick enough, Moog, you know. So anyway, A, we'll call him Moog for convenience, because that's what he's known as in this anglicised version of his name. St. Moog was placed on the stone. It floated out to the island. He floated out to the shore. He was baptised, and the stone retained this magical property and served as a boat of sorts until years later something unfortunate happened. There was a young couple decided to go out to the island, and en route to the island they got a little bit overly amorous, romantic, whatever you want to call it. You could call it lots of things, but anyway, the result was that divine wrath intervened and the stone split, and the amorous couple ended up in a watery grave in the bottom of the lake. One bit of the stone floated to the island. The other floated to the shore. It must have been the more... obviously, they weren't canoodling on that end of the stone, because it was rescued and turned into holy water font, and it served as holy water font in various churches. And it's still down in Bonboy. It's installed in the new church in Bonboy. This is supposed to be the upper half of the stone. But I suppose there's this... There's such an emphasis on sanctity and sainthood and miracles, and he's so many miracles that's associated in Wexford. He and Wales, wells sprung up automatically when he wished them to. He was big into beekeeping as well. He was supposed to brought bees from Wales to Wexford, and he mightn't be the patron saint of beekeepers in Ireland, but he certainly is ranked as being amongst the beekeeping fraternity as being a good beekeeper. But you see, there, as I said, there's so much legend, and we never let the truth get in the way of a good story anyway. So there's so much, but around here, the strange thing is, apart from his birth and the story of the stone, the floating stone, and also the property of the clay. Clay from this island is supposed to be, is supposed to have protective properties, mainly against fire and drowning. And there was a lady, she died quite recently. Her mother was on the Titanic, and she had some clay sewn into her clothes, and when the Titanic sank, she was one of the survivors. It even has spread as far as America. There was a lady in Florida who had St. Mogue's clay in a house in Florida during one of those tornadoes or storms and hurricanes, and the house was practically survived and other houses.
I saw that on Sky News. That actually was on Sky News about 20 years ago. I was in London.
It's not even that.
And I saw the woman, and it showed the devastation, the absolute devastation. One house. One house. And she stood there and she said she had visited Templeport and had this clay from this island. And she reckoned that that protected her and her family. I have to say, for me, this island is quite special. The serenity that one feels and the tranquility and peace. And even here, like looking at these little damsonflies and, you know, we have herons and, oh, so many different birds. There is something, I don't know, it's good for the soul. It's mystical, it's magical. It is just divine, but it is the peace. And I can so understand St. Mogue's family choosing here. It is, you say meditative, and it is. One does not have to practice meditation. One just needs to switch off, and here is the perfect place to switch off and just partake of nature, really. Well, that was a lovely little time on the island, Oliver, and riveting. Thank you so very much. I learned loads.
My pleasure.
Really did. Shall we hop on the boat now and go and visit Sheila McKiernan down the Keeper's Arms and have a chat with her? And our boatman is there ready. We didn't pay him, so he has to bring us back.
Hi, girls.
Hi, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
How are you?
I'm good.
Any
good.
Fun?
Did you have a lovely day on the island?
Oh, fabulous. Yeah. Oh, it's filled with damsonflies. Sheila, you're in the heart of the geopark, in the heart of a beautiful village of Bunboy, and you run a fabulous establishment, the Keeper's Arms. You get serious amount of tourism from, well, I suppose, St. Mogue, people coming, visiting, looking for their history, their heritage. There's so many things to do, whether it's kayaking or caving or just unwinding and going for some of these walks. So tell me a little bit, please, about what you offer and your tourism. Tell me about the tourists. Tell me all the naughty stuff they get up to.
We have fantastic tourists coming to this area in years. Oh gosh, I've been at this for the last 30 years, Isabel.
30 years? Oh, but Sheila, they look at you. You hardly look 80. Sorry.
We have.
You hold your age, Sheila.
Thank you very much.
Seeing as we're the same.
Have had some fantastic people. Oh my gosh. I think if I wrote a book, I'd be liable. And Annie said the Americans or the Australians come in here, more so from those countries, they're looking for their ancestry.
Okay.
And between Aidan and Oliver, and even with Kieran McGuire down here in the village, he's the retired school teacher. Once you have a town land, absolutely brilliant. And they'll go off and they'll come back and they'll tell me where. And I even remember Kieran telling me one day where some McGovern, there's so many McGoverns in this area, was buried. And he brought the people to the graveyard up in Curla. And then 3 days later, he rang me. He said, Sheila, I need you to go and take the photograph of the headstone 2 graves down, because that's the right McGovern. And I had to email it back over to America. I'm sorry, we brought you the wrong one. He did research and he brought it to the right, gave him the right one.
Okay.
And that ticks the box for them. We had a couple here last week and their family name was Brady. And they came from Bombay. But they had literally, they didn't have, that's all they had. But, and I said, well, I can't tell you where to go. And she said, no, we're here. That's all we want. We want just to be here to say that we've been here. We've stayed in Bombay. And we can go back and tell our family that we were there, even though they didn't know where exactly the homestead was.
Sheila, you're an amazing facilitator for these people who are tracing their history and their heritage and want to see the area. They're quite lucky when they come across you. They really are, because you know so much, and what you don't know, you're willing to find out and you're willing to ask people. But it must be a really special feeling when people have found their history, where they belong.
Yeah, and it's great. It is a great feeling. You feel you've achieved something as well. It's nearly like you've nearly found another family.
To make people happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's part of, I suppose it's part of what we do, and we've learned. I suppose I've learned how to do this over the last 30 years, because I had one lady worked for me and she was brilliant. And I learned from her, because she had a great way with her, how to talk to people and how to get the best out of people.
Okay.
And I have to say, Margaret Brady, I have to give her accolade, because she was brilliant and I learned from her. And then you're learning from the people that you're working with and coming into, they're looking for information. So everybody you meet is somebody new that you will learn from. And when you see that they have achieved what they came looking for, and you feel, right, well, I've done a good job here.
Yeah.
And that makes, I suppose it makes what I do, it's my accolade. It's my my reward for doing what I do.
Well, testament to that is your returning guests year after year as well.
Yeah, yeah. Our fishermen are just, they are the best. They come back year on year on year, and they sit at all our lakes, our beautiful lakes around.
Rain, hail.
And in rain, hail, or, well, they won't go to snow. Rain, hail, or shine, they will sit and they will fish. And they'll come back and they'll have their stories about what they caught and what they didn't catch and who fell into the lake. And, it's good. There is a storyboard there to be able to tell about the history of the Barn Church and the history of St. Mogues Island. You know, people are mesmerised that the history of St. Mogues, like with Maria's painting on the boathouse.
Is this Maria Ganala?
Yeah. And the painting that there depicts the story of St. Mogues, like you would nearly need no brochure, because that tells it in its own right. And the people are they're amazed that in such a small area that we have this fantastic history. And the connection.
Yeah.
And because it's right in the middle of our geopark, it's great.
Yeah. Okay, Sheila, you are in a majestic area. You have Quilca looking over you, little valley filled with history, heritage, the most beautiful scenery that one could find anywhere in Ireland. And it's people. Like, it's people really are the best. I think Cavan people can't be beaten. This must play a big part of your business, all this history and heritage and the people, because the people gather here, both locals and visitors. So how does that then play on your business?
The development of our business over the last number of years has totally enriched the whole area. And me, I have given of my time and my work, and the reward that I've got back from the people of the area and from our tourists and everything like that, one gels with the other, one blends. If you didn't have the people, you didn't have the business. The longer you work at it, the better you get, and the more people you meet and keeps coming into the area. And with the promotion that you do as well, of the area, like you have 10 good reviews, 20 more people will come to the area.
Yes.
And it feeds off the other. And the more people that comes into the area, the better it is for the area to see that they enjoy the heritage, the culture that we take every day as norm. I suppose we're living in green fields. We're not living in big, we're rural. And people support the rural, we support the rural lifestyle that we live in. There was one guy, he was from here, and he used to come on holidays every year, and he was reared here and he went to England. And when he died and he was buried in England, and I wrote a couple of lines for them, for the family. And I said, when John came to visit us, he was one of the locals. Yeah. He was home. He was one of the locals. People get used to of the people coming in, and they know that they're visiting the area. And that means so much.
There's loads to do. I mean, I know that you kind of do little itineraries and so forth, and one can have it as action-packed as one likes. So you can, I don't know, go caving or kayaking or cycling up the mountains, or, you know, so you can really push yourself, or one can just take a step back and really enjoy the beauty and the tranquility and visit places like Bear Essentials, one of the biggest teddy bear museums in Ireland, fabulous shop. But there's loads here to do, and I imagine that because of where you're based as well, like in the heart of the geopark, and we're near so many things, that you must get a huge amount of people coming, not just to visit our small area, which, you know, one day, 2 days, 3 days isn't enough. There is so much to see and do.
I suppose we're ideally based. You know, you can do your day trips. And we're so close to Fermanagh, Leitrim, Sligo, and the whole of Cavan to do the day trips. You have the fabulous museum up in Ballygemstuff. You have a museum in Enniskillen. You have Drumshambo experience, gin experience. You have a museum in Ballinamore. You have the walkways, you have greenways. You have the kayak, canoes, and literally you can just literally get a sun chair and go and sit at the side of a lake and read a book or listen to the birds and the wildlife.
And you facilitate everyone that comes, and they come, they have a great time, and they go away happy with their hearts singing.
Yes.
It's a lovely, a really lovely job you have, a vocation.
Thank you. Bombay is home. Bombay is home, Yeah. When you turn the corner, you know you're home. Or even when you come off the Marsh Road and you're turning in, and even especially in the wintertime and the lights, and you're driving in through the trees, that to me is magical. It's home. Get on the next plane. Yeah, we'll show you whatever you want to see. And you'll have the best experience in Ireland. In Bombay, Templeport, you'll have the best experience.
Yeah, you'll find things that you didn't know you were looking for.
And yes, and more. And more.
Yeah. It touches your soul. I really think that this area touches your soul. Whether you expect it or not, it touches you. I hope you enjoyed our short visit to Bombay. There really isn't anywhere like it. Come and experience the magic for yourself. This has been a Cavan Heritage podcast. Thank you to everyone who gave their time to bring this piece to life. If you've enjoyed this episode of Where We Belong, please make sure to like, leave a review and share. You can subscribe to this podcast to keep up to date with all new episodes. Until next time, Sláinte agus beannacht.